Chapter 40. What Should I Abstain from Doing? The following discussion took place at a center meeting, at which the writer of this had the pleasure of being present. After the usual lecture by the speaker, the audience was given the opportunity of asking questions about the subject of the lecture. Among the pupils was a very aged lady who had a problem, and according to her, she was speaking on behalf of the majority of the audience. Her question was, "What should I abstain from doing? I know what I should be doing because all the school's books are full of that. I just want to know what I should not be doing." Of course, the simplest would have been to answer in one sentence, "You should abstain from doing anything that interferes with your doing." But this pupil would not have been satisfied with that. She had not yet reached the level of self-knowledge that Paul had when he was faced with this problem in a different way. He said, "What I should do, I don't do, and what I should not do, I do." But our friend answered this statement of Paul's very decidedly with, "I know what to do. I just want to know what not to do." Things were getting difficult, for she wanted a positive answer. If she had really known what to do in a gnosis-directed state, she would undoubtedly also have known what to abstain from in order not to disturb her actions. Hence we could say, abstain from everything that keeps you away from the gnosis. We do what our human duties give us to do in this world of dialectics in as harmonious a way as possible, without becoming fanatical or overwrought. For example, our conference centers bring many cares and duties, including dialectical ones, but nevertheless they have been built purely and simply to serve the pupils and possibly any seekers for the gnosis. That is the goal we make ourselves subservient to. In this way, all our work in the conference centers and in every other aspect of the spiritual school is work purely aimed at the gnosis, even if we work only with a broom and dustpan. The following example is equally valid. If I need to prepare an address, I will not go to a cinema beforehand to see a film and to mix with a crowd of people out for a sensational thrill. I abstain from doing so for the reason that the cinema only provides entertainment on the dialectical plane, while the writing of an address requires absolute one-pointedness of direction at the service of the gnosis. In other words, to do the one thing that is gnosis-directed, I will not do the other thing. As a personal word, I would like to add that by its very nature, I don't go to the cinema, except under very exceptional circumstances. And exceptions have occurred. To summarize, the serious pupil will not do anything that could in any way interfere with actions that need to be done in directedness at the gnosis. Our aged friend next wanted to know what the new field of life looks like. Oh dear, how do we answer that? She looked very militant and wanted a definite answer. Initially, the answer given was a philosophical dissertation about the divine spirit and his nucleus, the divine sun, and the plan that the Logos has for us humans. An analogy was made between the divine sun on the one hand and the consciousness flame of the dialectical human being on the other, as they both attract an etheric respiration field around themselves. The former respiration field is divine and pure, while the respiration field of the dialectical personality still has to be purified by a process of change. Only then does an attempt at conciliation follow from both sides. The spiritual school of the Golden Rosy Cross, manifested sevenfold, has appeared among us as a mediator. However, the lady asking the questions had not in fact asked for a philosophical dissertation about the creation of the new field of life. She simply asked, "What does the new field of life look like?" It would have therefore been simpler to answer in short. The new field of life can be compared in an atmospheric sense to highly illuminated small clouds in a sky brightly lit up by the sun. Such highly illuminated clouds are without any shadow or darkness, just as the Gnostic field of life knows no darkness or shadow. This atmospheric field can be discerned by a very refined, focused eye as a tenuous ether substance irradiated with light. Perhaps this example can provide something to hold on to. Sometimes we need something to hold on to in order to remain open to the sevenfold radiation power of the universal gnosis so that it can serve for our eternal well-being. Epilogue. Oh, give us people. Oh, give us people full of strength and courage. People, purified in hallowed glow, strong as heroes in resistance and combat, quiet and patient in suffering and distress. Oh, give us people, as clear as the mountain air, faithful and true to the depths of their being. People in whose eyes heaven declares the joy of the soul in radiant shine. Oh, give us people linked to God, who have won the victory over themselves under the cross, Son people who give themselves away, in whose beings we experience God. Oh, give us people full of love and strength, giving service in deep humility. People who dare all things in deep faith, praying and born by God. Where are these people, I hear you ask? Oh, soul, accept this. Only one was perfect on earth, all others are still growing. Do not look around you, but see within. You yourself must vanquish that, which can make you a human being for God's use by diving into the sources of life, by an unknown Dutch author.